I was going to send a telegram, but I was stunned. I know one large church in our region that was very familiar with the Bible. And people are going with their people when it comes to their money, etc. And one of the things I find fascinating is the amount of comment I hear about the young Christians about missionaries. We may not satisfy all of what's going on. Now, we have a lot of missionaries go through here. Paul Morgan is the resident missionary over to the Grand Center for this year. So we have a lot of contact with business, and we have a lot of relations to test feedback. The most difficult part of talking about missionaries is finding who they are. Is a missionary only those persons who go to a foreign field and work full-time to spread the gospel? If so, the Apostle Paul was not qualified to listen to the amendment. Open the door of one of the Bible church is trying to read, you are now entering your mission field. That's what they're saying, anybody in the camp, not just a formalized missionary. I never liked that thought. Some of the most fearless people I ever seen when it comes to giving a reason for the hope that is within them are engaged in occupations to which do not fit the classical definition of missionary. If you don't believe me, sometimes you should be with Bill Pollard when the opportunity presents itself for him to give the reason for the hope that is within him. Absolutely fearless. He's absolutely confident of what's going on. I know he's here today, so I'm told I don't know his name, but I can't believe how he operates. I remember one time hearing a story from somebody who was there about him talking with Wayne Newton, who owns the building here, when he was the entertainer in Las Vegas. And he had no problem talking to somebody even like that. If he is technically not an issue, someone will call him. Then he actualized one to most conventional missionaries. What are some of the Christians saying about conventional missionaries? This is what I hear on the street, etc. Some seem to be very, very lazy. It's like they couldn't make it in the real world, and therefore they became missionaries. Or I hear things like some of them are very elitist. Some of them say, well, my daughter is married to someone who's a housewife. My son works in the steel mill, second first son works in the steel, and my third son is a missionary. Somehow, difference is more important. And in reality, what's really important is this, that as a practical matter, if you are in God's will, and he wants you to be a contact, you can't be more important application. There is no distinction between those applications. Some people in the mission field are very cause-oriented, the kind of people who they have so many personal problems they want to solve everybody else's problems. You can often tell them by the way they raise their children, they don't do a good job often in that area. And as a result, they just are very cause-oriented. It wasn't the mission field, it was some other type of cause. I hear also people complaining a lot about, man, how many missionaries? All they do is travel. Every time I turn around, there are another 20 problems. I can't even afford to drive to Germany again on Saturday. And I've got 40 people traveling all the time. I really don't care what most people say about this type of thing, but I think it's important here that we be honest and objective about it. There are problems among the nations. And if there's a problem there, you are looking at legal people right here, even worse. Or the medical people. There's always problems in any other field. You have to be honest and say that. Don't use certain examples that may be legitimate problems as an excuse for you to avoid that whole field of missionaries. And you know, it isn't just giving money to missionaries important. When was the last time anyone here, or you yourself, ever wrote a letter to a missionary? Or call them up in their blessing? Or had them up to the door in the home of girl? There must be some missionary who's doing a good job in your mind as you find it. And yet we have a tremendous propensity to take and avoid the whole field if you're going to point to single instances of problems. Not all of them are like that. Some of them are absolutely phenomenal. That's the point I want to bring across this morning. What's going to happen here now is Bruce is going to talk and then we'll have questions and answers at the end.
Okay, yes. You're right, though. Some of those accusations are true, but we're all individuals. And that's where the problem comes. The mission committee at Bethany was established a little less than a year ago. And as a group of individuals trying to act on your behalf, we've met every month. One of the first things we did was to establish a statement of purpose, and it goes like this: to promote enthusiasm for foreign missions at Bethany. Number one goal is to increase the awareness of world missions in the congregation, beginning with those connected with Bethany. Another one is to stimulate this assembly toward a more faithful prayer for prayer life for missionaries. And another, to encourage our missionaries through letter writing. Many things could be added to this as goals. In fact, would anyone like to contribute now to another goal in this regard? This is not a baited question or anything. I'm just asking if you have any ideas as to what else could be done at this time. Okay. All right. Anyone else? Okay. Yes, that's my understanding as well, is that the attendance is dropping off. And we've talked about it. For whatever reason, I don't know that anyone can put their finger on it right now exactly as to why it is dropping off. But that should be at least discussed in our area here. Anyone else? Okay, just let me make a few more observations, and these aren't, they're more at random. Our missionaries are representing us out there. They're not out there for their own exclusive reasons. They are accountable to us and to the Lord. Maybe some have forgotten that, Ed, according to your comment. But their progress should be measurable, and as I say, they should be accountable to us and to the other assemblies or whoever else is supporting them. We do get letters. I suppose this is one avenue of accountability. The other side, though, is that this is a spiritual battle in which they and we are engaged. And you wouldn't want to send out troops ill-prepared, ill-equipped. And the answer to this is prayer. And if you don't think that's true, talk to some of them sometime. You can hear some real war stories of how Satan has dealt with them, with the people they're ministering to, and it will solidify that thesis that prayer is necessary if they are going to carry out their job. And looking at it from their point of view, I would, if I were out there and I knew that I was not getting prayer support from the folks who sent me out there, I would say, what's the matter with these folks back home? Here I'm offering to go out here and do a job, and you're not backing me up. So that puts a burden on us as well. Another thing is, from our own experience, a number of years ago, and that is, I came to the conclusion that the better prepared a person is to go out and do whatever they are sent to do, the longer they'll stay, and the better job they will do. Sometimes this preparation takes a long time. Many of you know that I'm at the local Wycliffe office here, and I see people in preparation. It seems interminable, the years that it can take from the time they begin to prepare themselves until the time of their departure. I know in the case of the Powells, it was probably 3 years, but that included 2 years in Dallas as well. And so this, it just is, well, it can take the form of education. In the case of a linguist, 3 or more semesters of education. And it seems like they're never going to get there. And the cost of doing it is sometimes overwhelming, because it's at that time when you can least afford it. Another thing is that, getting into the financial area, about 75% of the missionaries in the world come from the United States. At least this is true in Wycliffe. And approximately 75% of the monies spent are from the United States. This can have its effect. Well, just let me give you an example. That's okay when the United States is doing well as a country, and we're not in a recession or a depression. And I, a number of years ago, I began to think about this and became concerned, because since the 30s, the United States, that is, has not really been in that predicament. So it was then, Lyndon, that I asked you what happened in the 30s when you were over there and money was not that plentiful. What did you do? And I believe your answer was, we just tightened our belts, we did with what we had, and went along as far as we could go. Is that correct? Okay. We don't know if we're going to see this again. And I hope not, but we might. So this is something to think about and pray about. The Lord has blessed this country, and hopefully those who know Him can give of themselves and their means for the spreading of the gospel. Go ahead. Go ahead, Lynn.
No, I don't think it's this uncertain. In fact, it seems to have gone ahead at that time. And they thank the Lord for all the years and months we have not to live out of. And certainly the Lord passed out where they have saved the school. But the other work as well, the gospel work at that time, was the blessing of the Lord.
How many children do you have?
Well, we had about 29. And I was in the church about 32. And one time we were through, and so I was about 120.
Okay, thanks, Linda. In recent times, I've seen a statement, and I believe it originated with the U.S. Center for World Missions. In addition, I saw that same statement on a map of the world, which we have in the office. It's a well-illustrated map. I'm trying to get a hold of it so it can be put up downstairs, because it just gives a wealth of information. And it was distributed, in this case, by the World Home Bible League. And on that map was the statement, how churches of the Western world use their money. Now that's Just take it for face value. I don't know any of the background to the statement or where how they arrived at it. But it bears out, I imagine they got it from U.S. Center for Worldwide Missions. 95% of the money is used for domestic activities. This is a condemning statement, and maybe that's why it's there. 4.5% to establish mission work overseas. Establish. 0.5% for work among the unreached people. Now you have to understand that this map is focusing on the unreached people groups. Not just countries, but people groups. Many within each country. But what they're saying is that very little is spent on reaching unreached people groups. I'm not sure I go along with this, and as I say, I don't know how they got their figures. But 95%, they claim, is spent for domestic activities. And I got to thinking, what do they include in that figure of domestic activities? If it is the support, the running of local congregations, then 95% would have to include a large chunk for that purpose. And, you know, how much do we spend here? 70? 60%? I don't know exactly. But take that out of the 95, and you have the balance of which, say, 5% is going toward the establishment of overseas work and work among the unreached people. And so they're saying that a very thin portion is used for reaching out to the other parts of the world. There's another matter of missions overseas, and that is the work in some cases is being curtailed, if not completely shut down, because governments say so. On one hand, you have governments opening up to the gospel, and in the other case, you have curtailment. So what is the answer? If this continues without work being allowed to be finished, what do we do? What happens when the missionary leaves or is forced to leave? One answer that's come about in recent years is the development of national Bible translation organizations, in this case translation. There's church planting and evangelism and a number of other mission activities. But from just the translation point of view, national Bible translators are becoming more effective. It has taken a long time to get started because of the education involved and the willingness for the local congregations to find and educate and send these folks and keep them within their own country and find support for them. But that is probably the best answer. They don't have a language problem, although they may have to learn another language within their own country, but they have free access. They can't be denied visas. And hopefully when the expatriate goes, for one reason or another, they're still there and carrying on what was originally started. And really, for this, we're very thankful. We're working ourselves out of a job, so to speak, and perhaps that's good. But someone is still picking it up and carrying it in their own country. Okay, I just had a few Well, let's just see what Ed has here. And oh, you didn't have anything, huh? Okay. Are there any comments, questions, responses? Grace? Were they, yeah. Go ahead. Ed.
I think that brings up a good topic too, and that's it. And that is that I think that one of the problems we're facing today is in almost every sphere of life, whether it's business or education or missionaries or other, things are changing very, very rapidly. And you'll find more and more, the conversational platform, they refer to zero-based budgeting at the end of every year. So these corporations will say they make no assumptions. You know, they're assuming nothing. They're assuming zero. And they'll look at reality as they're going towards it and say, now what should we do now? They're engaging business, new business plans. They're setting up new business. They're trying to cope with a whole new environment. Let me give you a couple of examples. That's it. Number one, for example, one of the largest junior colleges in the country is College of San Diego, around 34,000-35,000 students. They have 2,000 foreigners. So what are we going to do? A lot of them are going to go back into the Asians. The contact that you can have and I can have with those type of people, and we don't even have to make the country. An entirely different way of looking at things. Let me give you another example. One day I'm watching a fundraising thing at WCCW, and they said they need enough money to buy 10,400 programs. And we shouldn't have that much money. What do you mean? Well, if you sit down and count the number of hours in a week and half-hour programs and all this, the amount of material they need on television is actually going to be in the third world countries, they have so much television time that they can't fill it for the real. Movie science films are on a lot of third world countries. What about the future of mass media? Let me say the City Broadcasting Association in Japan. And they would refer to, like, actually having actual listeners on television. Actual listeners, not the best ones. And they'd get up to 2 weeks to set the point. We want an incredible exposure, and as a result, I think we have to begin to think more ingeniously about how we spread the gospel, and not just go along in the same methodical way we did in the past. Bill Pollard, you tend to be a futuristic type of individual. Well, how would you respond to my comment? I would only do this to a fellow who I think I'm a speech.
Thank you.
In that regard, let me mention something too, and that's this. In that same vein, there's a book out that Harper wrote called Winning Business Plan, or something like that, the MIT Forum, it's about. And it's the craziest book I ever saw in my life. It tells you how to write business plans. And it's excellent, well-read book. I swear, about every other page, it keeps going back to one thing. Determine what your customers need one. Forget about what you think. You worry about them. How do you get into their head? I've told the story before that I think the very best course I ever had, you need a great school, high school, college, or law school, with a sports car and leading college called Business Letter. And then it sounds almost like a course in a football player. And this lady took, who brought the course, she was giving it, she goes, and the only thing she kept going is get into the head of the person you're leading. We don't look at psychology. And I think that a lot of times don't do that. And what is it very much working with? And it's very important to a lot of people in other parts of the world think much better than we do, obviously. And we can't go there to that, you know, this world away and just think that they all think like that. And you have to put some things in front of them and with you know them as well.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions about Bruce's activities or the missionary committee here at Bethlehem Chapel? How were the funds raising for the, by the way, for the Unit of Missionary Office? I think it's December 31st.
I know, I don't have a figure.
We don't want to push this in any way. But yes, Bruce.
Well, I have to advise you to answer this question. You asked him to become more effective. But several times, I wrote about the Lord, and I worked in some of these. And I was afraid that I was going to missionary. And the time to spend with him, they asked for no money. They got even a gift from the assembly. And he said, we want more of it. And get out of it. And preach the gospel to the own people. Well, they didn't have another group. And he said, I'm afraid.
I think that I think what's interesting about this is there's a connection between these two right here, these two comments, strange and seem, and then it's the fact that as a practical matter, when you are a good steward, it seems to me that when you give money to the Lord's work, it's not fungible. Not everyone that you're giving money to is the same. In other words, you take some time and put some effort to find out who you're giving to and what they're doing. And it's amazing. I was really impressed with that thing that came out a couple weeks ago describing all our missionaries here. Very, very effective. After being here for 15 years, it was very, very effectively presented. And I was amazed how much I learned about some of them that I had not known before. So that's very important to find out what's going on. Somebody,
General.
Collaboration with the others is different.
Five and all that. A lot of that money is going in.
therapy.
And that's a very good point, because I saw the other day, I saw this many kids in over 600,000 Vietnamese that live in Los Angeles, and this is limited. Well, we couldn't kind of afford it.
Paul.
One of my father's favorite stories, I was one of the series, was a socially strong woman who lived in New York City, who was a black woman, and I mentioned she was a struggle with her. And we kept in the high position in the church,
That's a very good story. I think it is really amazing to this paradox that often occurs, and that is the gospel sometimes is best presented by those who take the most humble posture. I know this began in the years ago, that was in the case of Cuba. I remember one time, the nicest guy, worked hard, and one time he said to me, I asked him to get relevant. I said, oh, yeah, his father, all his father, 94. I said, have you seen him since you left? He said, no, you can't come out, and I can't go in. He said, that's all right. I'll see you soon. The thing that impressed me about him more than anything else was, the fellow very comfortably got his issues and let you know he was Christian. And the reason he hoped that he was in it is amazing how many kind of people give him that tremendous power in society, much more than you would ever think. Let me go back and tell one other story here for 1 second. And that's it. I can never remember, and then as soon as I know this, Bruce will close the prayer. I was again one time sitting in a meeting with a fellow, remember if you were there, he was a 67-year-old doctor. He was one of these medical fellows who, scanning jokes in the space planning area that most doctors and most lawyers don't know much about business deals, don't know much about making money. But he was one of the really kind of nasty. He was a very wealthy individual, very, very nice fellow. And he had been to Africa for 3 weeks, way back in the bush, at a very remote hospital, and he was describing how bad the conditions were. There wasn't gauze, there wasn't cotton, there wasn't this, there wasn't that. He started to talk how terrible it was there, and then this fellow started crying like mad. And boy, he was a tough coach, and he would laugh at it and cry. And he looked at him, he said, you know what the saddest part of it all? I was 67 years old. The first time I ever went to a fellowship beyond the Jesus. He was deeply, deeply rejected. And I might admonish you all here. Let us help you with some people. Or I'm meeting this stuff. Go down to the inner city, see how it turns out here. Just don't think this stuff all hypothetical, but actually see it firsthand. You might have a revolutionary way of looking at the future.
itself.
Thanks for bringing that up about missions at the Jerusalem level, so to speak, because it's important, and I'm sure people here feel very strongly about that. But I think that whatever you, however you feel about it, do something about it in the area which you feel strongest. That'd be my answer to this dichotomy between foreign missions and home missions, domestic. Let's just close now. Lord, we are grateful that we can be counted as your people to give our prayers and efforts and resources to work that you have brought before us. And we ask, Lord, that as the new decade unfolds, that you will continue to do this and cause us to rejoice in doing so, because we have the assurance of the way you're leading us. Thank you for opportunities in Eastern Europe where they are unfolding. I just pray that we can make the most of that opportunity. We never know when the door is going to close. And so just help us to redeem the time as world situations dictate, and redeem the time in our personal lives for as long as you have given us to be here. In Jesus' name, amen.